Welcome to Ripstop on the Record, a podcast where fabric enthusiasts and DIY gurus discuss all things make your own gear, with the occasional poor attempt at comedy to keep it interesting. I'm Kyle Baker, the owner and founder of Ripstop by the Roll, and we're excited to have you listening.
Hey, what's up, Isaac?
What's up, Jameson?
It's going great. Glad to be here. And we're back with episode 18, this time coming out on Wednesdays. We like to listen to the people and we want to give you an episode and a podcast that you like. So we saw the listens on Friday. We thought they could change a little bit. So we decided to release episodes now on Wednesday. Let us know what you think. As always, our inboxes are always open. But first, Isaac's going to let us know something.
Yeah, Friday's come up. And Friday means free fabric Fridays. And if any of you listeners want to go win some free fabric, you can check out our social media and see what you have to do to get that. Might be like a tongue twister or something.
That's right.
Free fabric Fridays.
Free fabric Friday.
Say, record yourself saying it 10 times fast.
15 times fast, if you're even more lucky. So on today's episode, we're talking with Gavin McWilliams. He's the global product manager at Samson Rope. He's been there for just over 3 years, as well as having a lot of experience in other textiles and technical applications. He's going to give us a little bit more info on Amsteel, as well as other Samson ropes. And ultimately, we're just going to have a fun conversation about some technical stuff, kind of nerding out as we do. So let's head to the episode. This is Ripstop on the Record. All right, Gavin, thanks for joining us today. And just as a starter for everybody listening, what do you do for Samson Ropes?
Yeah, so thanks for having me. So basically what I do is I develop the communications and product strategy for at least the markets that I look over, which is about half of the business. So looking at arborist, like fishing, utility, mining, sailing, some of our specialty markets like bowstring, stuff like that. So it's basically laying out like a product roadmap for the next couple of years, figuring out, or at least moving it through the pipeline through engineering, design, R&D, and then developing kind of our communication strategy, exactly who our end user is, how to communicate to them, how to reach them, whether that's through digital, social media, print advertising, going to shows, using third-party advocates on social media, stuff like that. So it's kind of the whole game. The good thing about the role too is that I kind of get to make it what works out best. We kind of have a bit of a skinny crew, and I have a background in international business. So one of the things, like before COVID took place, I knew that we had big opportunities overseas. Like primarily right now, we're kind of a North American based company, but I know that we have customers who are clamoring for Samson Rope in Europe, and we have some good customers there, but I know there's more. I know we have some customers clamming for Samson Rope over in Japan. So pre-COVID, I did the big European tour through Amsterdam, Germany, the UK, and then I went over to Asia, where I've lived for several years in the past, through Hong Kong, Taiwan, Korea, and Japan, set up some new accounts, found some new opportunities, and yeah, it's a good gig. I'm really enjoying it.
That sounds awesome. So Gavin, could you tell me a little bit about the background and kind of the history of Samson Rope, like where it got started, who it got started for, all that?
Yeah. So in 1878, a guy named J.P. Tolman, he was actually a member of the first graduating class of MIT, founded a company up in Boston, and he made the first braided rope with a reinforced core. So that's, 143 years ago or something. We actually still sell that same rope today. We just call it like general cordage. But since then, we've made lots of advancements in innovation, in technology. We introduced the first double braided rope in 1957. And basically what that is, like, when you take your shoelaces and you like twist them together or you braid them together, a double braided rope means you've got a braided core and then you have a braided cover. And those will change in function between sometimes the core will be the weight loading or the weight bearing member, and the jacket is just like abrasion resistance, or sometimes they'll share the load, something like that. So yeah, it always depends. And so in 1957, we introduced the first double braided rope. So that was super interesting. In the 1980s, we introduced the first HMP rope. So that's high modulus polyethylene. I think the best way to understand that is like, you know how DuPont introduced Teflon, and Teflon is, you know, the covering that that helps nonstick pans. So basically what that is we take a coating on a fiber, and then we twist it together to rope, and that makes essentially like a steel wire replacement for rope. So, you know, super high tech stuff. It's about four times the strength of the regular like nylon or polyester, about a tenth of the weight. And that's kind of what we specialize in. We work across a whole bunch of different markets aside from the ones that I mentioned already. We also do mooring and tugboat and lots of like big shipping lines. And we've helped NASA out with some of their space shuttle programs in the 70s. It's quite interesting. And I think, I don't know if you guys are familiar with the logo that we have, that was Samson battling the lion.
Yeah.
That is the longest continuous, the longest logo that's in continuous use in all of the United States.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's also kind of interesting.
That's impressive. Can you tell us a little background on the logo?
Oh, not a lot. I mean, Samson, the name comes from the Bible. And I think the idea, if I remember my Bible schooling properly, is just Samson was strong enough to beat the lion. And so when they designed that, it's just based on that.
Right. Gotcha.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
That's fascinating. First of all, I did not know that Samson Ropes had a history like that. But then also I didn't know that you dabbled in so many different industries. I'm fairly familiar with climbing, so I'm used to names like Sterling and New England and whatnot, but I only was made aware of Samson when I came to Rips Up by the Roll and saw Amsteel for the first time. Do you have something that you specialize in, or are those areas that you really are specialists in all those industries?
We're specialists in all of those industries. So the good thing we've got, I think probably our best core competency is our engineers, for example. And what I mean by that is they're some of the smartest people I've met, and they all know the application and usage in each one of those markets so well. I can easily say that we're an expert in each one of those markets. I mean, and then aside from that, we've got a sales crew that services each one of those markets. So I think we can service them top to bottom. So from a brand, I would say we are experts in each one of those markets. You know, granted, sometimes people will come to us and say like, hey, we need this for that. And I'll be like, I have no idea what they're talking about, but like, I know they need to have a rope that weighs or that can, you know, that can take this much, or that is this strong and this diameter and has this feel to it, and we'll make it for them. So sometimes, our primary markets, And it's split up pretty evenly. There's that. And then, of course, there's the stuff like, I have no idea what they want, but we'll make it for them.
So, Gavin, are most of the Samson products made in the U.S., or do you have global manufacturing? Or tell me a little bit about your manufacturing process.
Yeah, sure. So I'd say about 95% or so of what we make is made in the U.S. Our primary facility is up here in Ferndale, which is about an hour and a half north of Seattle. If you haven't, I'll be the top of the tourist board right now. Like, I mean, it's a great place to live. There's snow that's an hour and a half away. We're right on the ocean, or at least Puget Sound, and there's incredible mountain biking. So already we are a big attraction for a local labor force. But the largest manufacturing facility is up here. We have a secondary one down in Lafayette, Louisiana, that does a lot of our larger braid stuff for shipping and mooring. We do import some of our product that doesn't require as much technology. So some of the nylon, dock and anchor line, we'll get them from China. Okay. Sometimes the customer just needs, well, kind of back to the Teflon analogy. Sometimes you don't need to have the best, nonstick pan. You just need a nonstick pan. So we'll import that from someplace. But it depends on, it depends. But I'd say 95% of our products are made in the US.
Gotcha. Fascinating. Yeah, that is, I've heard nothing but amazing things about the Northwest and about recreation up there.
Cool. Yeah, actually, my sport is like a Hawaiian style canoeing, and so I've got especially around COVID, we have I've been on one man boats with my crew, and this is probably the second best place in the U.S. to go surfing. So we get a good wind and we drop it in one place and just surf for about an hour and a half, and you're good to go. It's a good spot.
That sounds like a pretty big bummer.
Yeah, and if the winds are down, you just go mountain biking and get lost for a few hours.
Yeah, shoot. Well, I'm sorry, Gavin, you have to do that, but
yeah, no problem.
Yeah,
I'm a huge canoeist myself, but mainly flat water, so I'm gonna have to look into that. I've never heard of that.
No, yeah, actually that's great. There's a big race up here too, called Ski to Sea, and missed the last couple of years, of course. But there's a big canoe leg that happens in one of the larger rivers. And I'd done so much like open ocean canoeing. This was my first time and I decided to race it. So I'm in the back, I'm trying to steer, I'm trying not to flip over. And of course we flip over and all that sort of thing. But flat water canoeing was a jam. It was really fun.
That's cool.
Now tie these ends up for us. How did you end up at Samson? You're obviously a recreational person with your activities that you like to do, but what drew you to coming to work for something, especially as maybe difficult at times in terms of rope and cord technology as Samson? How'd you end up there?
Yeah. So long story there. So my background is, I'm from Portland originally. And as you guys know, that's the home of Nike and North American office for Adidas and a whole bunch of other places too. So I was essentially born into footwear and apparel on the sports side. I worked for some of those companies that I mentioned, and there were additional opportunities in Asia to work for some of those companies. So I lived in Asia for about 14 years in Tokyo, Shanghai, and Hong Kong, all in the sports industry. When I came back here, I moved north towards Seattle for a few other opportunities for family things. And I had a really good mentor at one of my companies who went to be president of Samson. And one day she gave me a call to manage a business unit. And aside from sports, my educational background is marketing primarily. And they needed to have somebody to kind of look over the consumer side of things. So she gave me a call. And I decided to come up. So that's the game.
Awesome. So we polled the users for a lot of different questions, just seeing as Samson is one of our most popular products here, or the Amsteel.
Cool.
But a lot of people get confused. We carry two Samson products, or at least two primary ones, Zing It and then Amsteel. Mm-hmm. And our friend Carter reminds me frequently, if I get those mixed up, he's like, that's not Amsteel, that's Zing It, or vice versa. Can you tell us, or break that down a little bit more, what is the main difference between Zing It and Amsteel?
Yeah. So I think the first one is size. So Zing It only comes in like 1.75 mil and 2.2 mil. Amsteel Blue starts at 2.5 mil, so just a little bit bigger than that, and goes all the way up to 6.5 inches. Based on the kind of fiber. Yeah, and that's for the big mooring one. So like when you're the really, really big mooring boat. But also based on the type of fiber we're using for Amsteel Blue, it's more than two times the strength. So as an example, the breaking strength of the 2.2 millimeter Zing It is about almost 300 pounds, but the 2.5 mil, so just a little bit over that, is, for Amsteel Blue, is 650 pounds. So that's again more than twice. So do you guys want to take a guess at what the breaking strength is for the 6.5 inch Amsteel Blue? No, go ahead, just take a guess. Add a lot of zeros, but take a guess.
Jameson, what's your guess?
I mean, I'm thinking of like the Amsteel, that one's like 20 or 2000. So then like the one I'm looking at, whatever size that is. So we got to do a lot of math there. Let's just go with.
There's a lot of math. That's the thing. That's one of the things. There's a lot of math, and that's not my strong suit. So yeah, yeah.
That makes two of us. So I'm just gonna do a really bad calculation of 15,000 pounds.
That's pretty good. 6.5 inches of AMSA Blue is 4.2 million pounds of breaking strength.
Oh my gosh.
It's ridiculous. So from a construction standpoint, they're almost exactly the same, but the big one is size.
I see.
Gotcha.
Wow. That's close.
That's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
So going off that a little bit, could you tell us a little bit about the types of fibers that you use for the AmSteel Blue and Zingin? Do you use like Dyneema branded fibers, or are they generic ultra molecular weight polyethylene?
Yeah, sure. These are all Dyneema fibers. We use Dyneema in our top end, our premium products. We are Dyneema's largest consumer in North America. So we consider them a partner. We work really, really closely with them. We have started in the last, I don't know, 3 or 4 years to move into some more generic HMPE fibers. Again, kind of back to the Teflon. Not everyone needs to have Teflon. I just need to make sure my omelet's not going to stick. Right, I don't care how long it's going to last. So for those customers who just like, they just need something that's going to work real quick. We'll get it. We'll work on some of that. But I would say thumb in the air, 85 to 90% of the high tech stuff that we make is Dyneema.
Okay.
And within Dyneema, there are several grades. There's, there's kind of like a good, better, best. And then there's like a super best. So actually they just came out with something called DM20. You guys know like at Major League Baseball stadiums, the nets, when they hang the long nets. So we supply those as well. But there's a characteristic called creep. So when something is hung for a long period of time under tension, but doesn't have like active load on it. Well, it's not the right way to do it. It's not like pulled all the time. Mm-hmm. When it starts to sag in the middle of it, that's called creep. DM20 is a new fiber that we make that we turn into a product called Everstill X that has zero creep. So you can hang those MLB nets, and that's like, I don't know. We're gonna go back to the 4.6 million pounds. Like, I have no idea how much these weigh. You can hang those over an extended period of time, and there is virtually zero creep. So they make some really good product, and we put that in our premium offering.
And so that's still a UHMWP fiber. It's just at a higher grade, or
correct?
Yes. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah.
That brings up a really interesting point for me as well. That I've heard, because we talked with people from DSM last fall, and they mentioned those nets at MLB games. Mm. But what other applications to your cords do you have? Because I wouldn't have thought of netting. It obviously makes a ton of sense, but I would have thought about that in a different scope. What other ways do you see cordage or rope being used? Like, kind of like that netting example.
Wow. To be honest, here's the crazy thing about rope. You don't think about it until something goes wrong. I think you could walk down the street and you could see like a whole bunch of different applications and not even think about it. So just kind of sticking with sports for a second, you know, the flyby cameras that they use in NFL stadiums.
Yeah.
We use, actually, I'm not exactly sure which fiber, but we use Dyneema fiber for the ropes that hang those cameras and they won't break. There are like a million different uses. There's winch lines. So here's actually one of the things that I was most surprised with. So, you know, like on the power lines, they use our product for stringing lines. And essentially what that does is you have to essentially clamp one of our ropes to the end of a power line and string it up through the power poles and like pull it through. I'm motioning with my hands. I know you guys can't see that. it's kind of like a pulley, because you can't actually pull the power line through because it's a live wire.
Sure.
So that's another option. Again, lots of fishing applications. Kind of a preview down the road. I would love to get some high modulus stuff into the arborist industry. Tree mm-hmm. care in particular is something I've grown to be really excited about. And yeah. I think, and the reason for that is like the consumers are so excited about what they do. This kind of harkens back to my sports background. Like, you know, I love running, I love playing basketball. So it was always fun to work with that consumer and those distributors. It's fun to work with these guys who climb trees for a living because they love it. So you're always thinking of like, how can you make their lives better? And so I'm trying really hard to try to introduce this, this higher tech fiber into that market. The problem is it's too strong and it's not stretchy enough. Mm-hmm. So like it's, so it, it's not like dynamic climbing rope where you need something that's stretchy and it's going to catch you and absorb a lot of shock. Yeah. But it's something else. So, you know, we're always thinking, we're always trying to push the envelope into the next grade. I mean, this is, it's kind of part of our history and, yeah, we'll keep going. I mean, and even talking about climbing lines for a second, again, back to my background of sports. When I first joined Samson, that was one of the things I wanted to do more than anything. Aside from a market that would make the consumer excited about the brand, internally, you get like really jazzed if you're making something that's good for your, you know, the end consumer, something something's excited about. So I did a ton of research. Like, I know we had the capability to make a really, really good rope. Like I said, we have some of the best, most dedicated engineers on the planet. Like I guarantee it. So I went to outdoor retailer show for a couple of years. I met with a lot of people, went to a few sites. I don't know if you guys have ever been to, like, to Smith Rock in Oregon. Really, really great spot under all weather conditions. People are climbing. It's awesome. Mm. At the end of the day, what I realized is that there are so many already really good established brands. There's Edelwood, there's Mammut, there's Blue Water. And it would have cost us a lot of money to try to pull consumers away from these brands that they already love and trust. Oh. And even though we make, like I said, I'm confident that we'd make a really good rope, it would take a lot of like engineering resources, marketing resources to get to that point. I mean, I'll keep talking about it internally and all that sort of thing, but we just weren't quite ready to make that move yet. We've got other markets that are doing pretty well for us already. And I know someone would have, I would have gotten in trouble somewhere for using too many engineers to make a fun.
So what is it about Dyneema fibers that I guess, so Dyneema fibers does not have much stretch, correct?
Correct.
So that in my mind, I can see where that wouldn't lend itself really well to a dynamic climbing rope, like you said, because you need that shock absorbance.
Yeah.
Are there any other fibers that you work with that might, you know, that aren't necessarily like the typical fiber for that application that, you know, that might have better qualities for that?
Well, better quality. We would still use like nylon and polyester. Like, okay. Like we make really good, like, static is a, well, in comparison, static climbing rope. We already make some really, really good stuff, but just yeah. in terms of dynamic, we would probably use a good mixture of polyester and nylon that would come up with a, like a really good solution. But I think just okay. like, say, I mean, like which guy, what ropes do you use, Jameson? Jameson, you're climbing, right? Is that what you said?
Yeah. So let's see. I have used a, I've got a New England thick 10 millimeter double dry polyester.
Yeah. And you probably love that thing. Your life has been, you know, supported by it. To pull you away from that would take a lot. I mean, and I believe that, like I've got stuff that I use that I would never use anything else. My canoe, I'm not going to buy like another whatever brand. I mean, like you love this stuff that you love. And I think it would take a lot to pull away from that. So I totally get it.
So sticking with the fiber or the, the construction of these cords and ropes, what is a Samthane coating?
Can you? Oh yeah. It's actually really easy. It's just a polyethylene or polyurethane, proprietary polyethylene coating or polyurethane coating that we coat over roats to improve abrasion. And occasionally it'll have pigment. So like what we'll do is that there'll be most of the nylon and polyester that comes through as just like a natural color or a natural fiber color. And we'll put like a blue or a pink or a red or something in the xanthane coating just to give it that color.
I see.
But okay. It's primarily for abrasion resistance.
I see. Yeah. Now, is that similar in, is that why Amsteel is good for extended underwater use, or what lends that itself to that, the corrosion resistance that Amsteel has?
Oh, just cause, so like synthetic fibers just won't corrode, like okay. Nylons, polyesters, whatever, all that stuff. That's one of the reasons that it's really, really good. So super lightweight, super strong, won't corrode. Exactly. Yeah.
Fascinating. Now I'm jumping backwards a little bit here, but it just came to mind. We talked about the 6.5 inch. I don't even know if you can call that a rope or cord. I don't know what that's called. organism of what's the opposite of that? What is the smallest thing that Samson has?
I think actually Zingit. Oh, actually that's not true. We make bowstring. We don't even measure that in diameter. We measure that in denier. So it's essentially like how heavy is it instead of how big it is. So yeah. So we make bowstring. We don't sell it as a Samson product. We supply the largest bowstring producer in North America, and we twist it. We send it to them. And they'll coat it and get it and sell it. And they put it on spools and sell it as bowstring.
That's really cool.
Yeah, it is cool. And I've been over to their shop. They've got a bow and arrow and the target set in the back. I swear on my mom, my first shot was a bullseye. I don't know if it's rigged. I couldn't hit anything after that. Like, you know, it's literally beginner's luck.
That's awesome. I do a lot of traditional archery. I love bow hunting and all that kind of stuff, so that when you mentioned that earlier on, I was definitely going to come back to that and get some more information.
Cool. Nice. Yeah, and I guess crossbows are a thing. It just makes me think of Chewbacca. So
yep. Okay, so we've talked about the bowstrings, talked about the 6.5 inch diameter rope. What are some of your favorite applications that you've seen made with, or just that you've seen Samson rope used for?
That is a great question. So I'll kind of back up a little bit. Here's the thing that trips me out about rope every day is that it is like a moving, living organism, and it always changes. You can change like a braid angle, you can change like a core that it's supposed to work with, and it behaves and acts differently. It's amazing. So for example, if you want to put, if you want to color a climbing rope, if you want to color the core of a climbing rope red, well, you can't just color it red. You have to make sure that the cover and the jacket is going to work with the newly coated core to make sure they interact properly and in the way they're supposed to. But yeah, I mean, it's amazing. So we make a static line called Mercury that was really good for rescue and access applications. We changed the braider angle. No. We loosened the bobbins on the manufacturing machine. And just by doing that a tiny bit, it slackened the pick angles. And it became this like entirely new thing. So it could still do what it was supposed to do. An 11 millimeter rope has about 8,600 pounds of breaking strength, but it suddenly became this like non-rigid rope. And it became this like nice thing to handle that is working really well back in arborist applications. They use it as single rope technique, climbing line. It's just like how it behaves under all types of different circumstances. And that amazes me every day.
Is that the Mercury CE that you're talking about?
That is correct.
Awesome.
Yeah, actually, I colored that rope when I got in. So one of the things I used to do when I was living in Shanghai to trend either silhouettes or prints that I was is I would go over to Tokyo and trend. So basically walk around Harajuku and all the cool places, see what the kids are wearing, see what the colors are doing. Yeah. And so I did essentially the same type of program with this. I went to a few Arbor shows, kind of looked at, saw what everybody was wearing. And most of the things, like 3 or 4 years ago or so, kids were walking around in like orange camo. So that rope is based off of like the orange camouflage that all these younger arborists were wearing. So yeah.
That's really cool.
This is so fascinating. I love getting this inside look, Gavin.
So,
there's so many places we can go. But first, another user question. What is something that we can look forward to, or what are you able to tell us about potential new products or new things that might tweak the interest of makers and DIYers?
Oh, that is a great question. I don't have too much I can share. I will simply say that we continue to reach out to all our consumers to see what they're looking for. We always encourage people to reach out to us to tell us what they need. And just kind of to, you know, keep your eyes in that digital space to see what we're coming up with. There's always something going on.
That's really cool. What's the best place to follow along with that? Like social media or on your website?
Oh yeah. Well, website for sure. That has a comprehensive view of everything, but okay. I make an active effort to put everything that's new or sometimes things that are upcoming, kind of like previews on our Instagram page. So at Samson Rope.
So we are doing some other research. Obviously we are used to the Amsteel, but we are very intrigued by some of these other ones. Specifically the biosourced ropes. It's obviously a big push for a lot of great reasons, but for instance, we have a couple eco fabrics here that are made from recycled water bottles. What does that construction process look for a rope? Obviously the fabric, for instance, ours, one of them is a sil poly, I believe. Obviously you want a tarp to work, but a rope generally can have that, you know, that life altering side of it. How do you create a rope that's biosourced?
Yeah. So in this case, it's actually really good. So the product itself isn't changing. So the simile I would give to this is just like electricity in your home. It's the same electricity, but instead of like being made by burning coal, it's being made by wind or something like that. So in this case, the Amsteel is exactly 100% the same, but how it's made is changing. So instead of relying on fossil-based fuels, instead we're using, or at least DSM, the company that makes Dyneema and supplies to us, is using tree scrap and tree pulp in their manufacturing process. So that's what's changing. And through that, we're working with them to reinvest back into the process to make sure that it continues to be sustainable. We're planting millions and millions of trees with them every single year. And the goal is to switch over to using only sustainable feedstock by 2035.
Interesting.
Yeah, and so we're really excited about this. For Samson, on its own, we have our own corporate initiatives in terms of sustainability. And this knocks in really, really well with that. So we're very, very proud to be able to offer this.
I'm sure that's incredibly comforting for a lot of people too, because like what you just said, it can be scary to think about the construction being totally different or the very thing that gives it its attributes changing, but those aren't altering at all. You're just using a cleaner process, right?
Exactly. And that's totally true. So for example, I mean, if you walked into any one of our distributors or walked into our factories, you've got it right now. It's all about kind of like, we're going backwards to help the DSM, the Dyneema company, invest in that process. So we're partnering with them for sure.
Gotcha.
Gotcha.
So, and then the next step, the next step after that is trying to figure out an end of life recycling plan. I know that some of the ropes that are used post-use are mixed into to create soccer fields and things like that. We try to send some of our ropes back to other places just for, you know, for other use, but we are actively working on a plan to have a full circle of recyclability.
I love that. That was my next question. I'm like, you don't, you know, there's a ton of climbers have loads of old ropes. You can't do anything with them, right? But you don't really want to get rid of them either.
I know. Yeah. In fact, I was just talking to another one of our customers, and we even threw out the idea of possibly using like a deposit plan. You know, like if you put 5 cents on a can of soda or something like that, like maybe we'll even, you know, work on some kind of deposit system. Hey, sometimes you go back and collect it. Here's my old rope. And sometimes you don't. I mean, we'll see.
I love that.
That would be really cool.
Yeah, it'd be fun.
So what is the lifespan of, you know, Amsteel Blue or any of these other like arborist ropes or mooring ropes?
Oh yeah, it really depends. I mean, some of these things can last for 10 years. Wow. If they're shock loaded past their peak, oftentimes they will not break, but they've been seriously compromised.
Gotcha.
But that's the problem. You can never really tell. I mean, somebody hands you a hank of rope. You don't know if somebody's spiked on it. You don't know if somebody's half fallen out of a tree. So, yeah. I mean, like under normal conditions, like forever. But you never really know what someone has done with rope before you get your hands on it.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
So my science background is probably similar to my math background, where you know, it's going to be subpar. Could you touch on a little bit more about what it is about the UHMWPE fiber makeup that is hard to incorporate that into a dynamic rope? Because I think about those two things and I'm like, wow, this is the perfect match. You know, if you take, again, dynamic rope often is most closely related to climbing, and there are other applications, but if you take a big fall, you're not going to get too many of those before you have to get a new rope. And the UHMW, the strength of that is really intriguing, because you could take more falls, you could be more safe, you can just be more confident in that. But why can't you merge those two?
It's purely that stretch factor. So what happens when you've got a nylon rope, and say you fell from 100 feet, if you fall, that the nylon rope is going to take, so let's see, I don't know the math specifically. If you are jumping, you're going to generate up to, let's say you're generating up to 20 times your body weight in force. The nylon is going to absorb absorb more of that than the HMPE rope that won't absorb any of that. And where all that shock will then go to your body and break your spine. Yeah. So that's so
not
that's
ideal.
That's the major problem we're facing. And that's why like I really want to bring that stuff in. Like it would be so good. I just got to find like the right mix and the right use. We've even worked on stuff like blending polyester and HMPE, because I want to give that strength. Because imagine if you're climbing up a wall and you've got a super strong rope, it only needs to be half the size or less to maintain the right strength. I mean, that means you're carrying less weight. That means you can climb longer.
Yeah.
Yep.
And it's just not stretchy enough. So yeah, it's a tough one.
That's a really fun, I'm sure it's frustrating for those that are doing the real work to make it happen, but that's really exciting, because it's kind of one of those things that feels like we're still not in the future yet. You know, like that is so optimistic to think that in the future we could be lead climbing on an 8 millimeter, 6 millimeter rope without taking a lot of compromise.
Yeah. Wouldn't that be cool? And I'll tell you something. We do have an innovations engineer, and they're working on it. We're not there yet.
Sure.
Somebody's working on it.
That's awesome. That is so cool.
Cool to know.
Yeah.
Oh man, I love it. Gavin, this has been so fascinating just to pick your brain. Thank you for spending a bit of time with us. We're wrapping up on the questions. We've touched on pretty much all the ones that we can have. And then Isaac, we've just been going off of what we've been thinking. Isaac, do you have any other questions?
I do have one more question for you. So it's a little more of a, like, technical related question.
But when you're doing like tensile strength testing for your ropes, the ropes that have a jacket, do you base the breaking strength off of when the jacket breaks or when the core breaks?
Great question. So whatever the rope is designed to do, that's the baseline. So if they're built to share the load, we'll wait until they both break.
Gotcha.
Even if one breaks and the rope is no longer viable, that's the baseline. So here's the difference too, that we'll break our ropes up to 40 times to get that average break strength. So we won't break it just once. So yep, we're good. We'll do, like, I've seen these graphs of lab tests that we've done, and our laboratory is phenomenal. You walk, there are these long splicing benches. We've got this enormous SATEC break machine. My favorite thing is the drop tower. It's super cool. I mean, you have somebody go up there and you put place like X amount of weight, 50 pounds, 100 pounds, and you just drop it. It's super cool.
Sounds great.
Yeah. So the breaking is based on however the rope is built or what it's built to sustain. And then we test it 40 times before we set a spec on it.
Okay. Very interesting. Thank you for answering that.
Yeah, no problem. Happy to answer anything else too.
Well, you haven't invited us, but we're totally there. This is right up our alley. what Isaac and Carter and what we all like to do here is just see what we can test and see what happens. So you're speaking our language.
Great. No, you guys are 100%. When everything opens up, I absolutely invited to come over. The lab is awesome. The manufacturing facility is awesome. The whole thing is pretty exciting. I really like it.
That's fantastic. Well, Gavin, it's been absolutely incredible talking to you. Thank you for sharing this knowledge. Thank you for spending some time with us. The makers and DIYers, I'm sure will love it and appreciate it. Is there anything else that you can share? We'll make sure to link the Instagram so that people can follow Samson there. But yeah, is there anything else that you want to let the people of Ripstop Mother Roll know from Samson?
No, nothing. Everything sounds great. Thanks for the questions, you guys.
Awesome.
Thank you for answering all of them.
Yeah. Well, Gavin, have a great day. We'll be in touch again. We love working with Amsteel. It's a huge, like I said, it's one of our a big products of ours. So we will continue to be in touch with you guys. And as always, just thanks again.
Yeah, no problem. Anytime.
Awesome. Until next time. Thanks, Gavin.
Bye. Thanks, Gavin.
Thanks.